Welcome to Windy City Sports Talk, Chicagoland's number one podcast for all the latest news and in-depth analysis for the Bears, Bulls, Blackhawks, Cubs, and White Sox. This podcast features exclusive news and expert analysis from well-known Chicago sports reporters and broadcasters. You will also feel the passion and emotions during conversations with other diehard sports fans. Other unique sports topics such as virtual reality and video games are explored as well. It's now time to talk Windy City Sports. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Windy City Sports Talk. We are now a few weeks into the NHL season, so I figure it's time to get back into talking about the Blackhawks. No, they're not a dominant team. They haven't been winning many games, at least until recently, but I must say they look a lot better than what I predicted prior to the season starting on my last episode talking about the Hawks with Josh Kessner, where we both really weren't feeling too good about this team. However, even after a very tough start to the season against the defending champion Lightning, they've been playing pretty well of late, especially in the last week or so. They might have their new number one goalie. A couple of youngsters are stepping up. And of course, you still have the usual veterans, guys like, you know, Duncan Keith and Patrick Kane still there doing their thing. So it's a fun team to watch. Still remains to be seen what exactly they're going to be and if they can continue the play like they are here in the last 7 to 10 days. But either way, as long as they stay competitive and they make it fun to watch and worth watching, spending a couple hours every evening to watch, then I'm totally okay with that. And joining me today on today's podcast is Brooke Laferno. She covers the Blackhawks on thehockeywriters.com, and they also do weekly podcasts on YouTube. You could check out their page as well, The Hockey Writers. So, Brooke, thank you for coming on the show today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. So you said, I like to give them a moment to shine about where people could find their content and whatnot. So can you take a minute here to talk about the Hockey Writers and what you guys do and where they could find their your podcast and what you guys talk about on there?
Yeah, so I'm part of five people on the Hockey Writers that talk about the Blackhawks. So we got my colleague Gail Kowchuk, Greg Boyson, Sean Filippelli, and our newest one, his name is Nimrit Singh. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm sorry. But we also do our Blackhawks Banter podcast every Monday night at 7 o'clock Central Time. And you can find that on the Hockey Writers YouTube channel. And then you can also find our content on thehockeywriters.com and click the Blackhawks, and you can find our author pages, our social media, all of that fun stuff.
All right. And I do highly recommend as well, because I did check out your most recent episode and have read some of your articles and some of your other colleagues. So definitely worth checking out the content that you guys put out every week. So, well, without further ado, let's get into it. So this is the first time I'm actually talking hockey with you. So especially the Blackhawks in this situation they're in right now, especially with, you know, we're kind of, I like to refer to the old days as the glory days. You know, we're not really in that Stanley Cup window anymore. They're, you know, the Blackhawks admitted prior to the season starting that they were going to essentially be heading into a rebuild. It's not a massive rebuild, because if it truly was, we would have traded, you know, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and guys like that. So it's not maybe a full-on rebuild, but there are a lot of new faces with the team this year. And then you get hit with that news with Kirby Doc getting injured a few weeks before the season starts. Then you find out your captain, Jonathan Toews, isn't playing due to some undisclosed issues. So like I said at the intro of the podcast, I really wasn't feeling that good about this team heading into the season. I really expected a lot of struggles, and it did start off like that. But as we see, it's getting a little bit better. But I'm curious, before we delve into everything, I'm curious to get what your thoughts and expectations were for this team prior to the season starting. Again, knowing Doc and Toews aren't going to be playing and knowing that there's so many new faces to the roster.
So my first thought was, when the expectation was that Toews and Kirby Doc were still here, essentially, hypothetically, I didn't still feel very good about it, because we've had them on, you know, the past couple of years, and it's not their fault. It's more just their surrounding cast is just really bad. And so I felt like even with them gone or with them here, I didn't think it was going to change that much. But when they left, then I was definitely like, oh boy. And then when you look at them on paper, like writing out their roster, and you're like, oh my gosh, I have never seen a roster look this bad on paper. But that's the weird thing about hockey, is you can have a team on paper that looks like they could go undefeated the entire season and then they don't play up to par. And then you have teams that look terrible on paper like the Blackhawks do, but somehow are okay. So my expectation was obviously it wasn't very good even with Taze and Doc in there. And then after they left, I was like, okay, now I really have no faith in this team whatsoever, which I think you and most fans probably said the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, even with your top two centers, I wasn't thinking that they were going to do much either. Now you almost wonder, okay, if they were playing, you're like, man, you kind of wonder where would they be? Like, I dare I say, I feel like maybe we would be above 500 at this point, given the fact that, you know, again, some of these newer faces, they are showing up, they are playing, and they are contributing, especially Janmark, who the former star had another good game last night against his former team in Dallas. And of course, the youngsters too. I mean, one guy that was highly touted was Ian Mitchell. And you know, one thing that I guess Stan Bowman likes to do, well, he doesn't have a ton of money to play for, with, you know, with the salary cap, he does like to do his European scouting and finding different guys to sign, you know, in the other free agent market, as I like to call it, not where your main guys are, where, you know, you're already well-established NHL players are. So speaking of the new guys and the young faces on this roster, like I said, there's a lot. Ian Mitchell, Zadorov, Walmark, Janmark, Kurashev, Suter, even more guys. I mean, the list is really long. If you had to pick a couple of these guys that you've been the most impressed with, who would you pick if you were to make a list of most impressive new guys so far?
So I've been really impressed with Brandon Hagel as of late. I think he has been noticeable in every single game. He's not there really on the score sheet or on the points or on the scoreboard. And he doesn't have a lot of points to back up his work, but he has been doing, I think he's so noticeable. He's so fast. He's so skilled. He does good job on the corners and he's a good digger. He does a good job of digging pucks out of the corners. Kind of reminds me of a young Andrew Shaw a little bit with the way he plays, but I think once he finally cracks open his scoring, then he's going to be really good. So I've been really impressed with him. And we've also been super impressed with Kurashev. He is so talented, just the way he stick handles. And I'm always so impressed with him. And I think he's going to be a gem for the Hawks going forward. So those two especially, I'm really impressed with. And I am impressed with Suter, but he kind of did fall off a little bit after he got his hat trick against Detroit. But again, they're all young, they're all growing, they're all new. But I am impressed with all three of them.
Yeah, if I had to go with a guy that's been in the league but was a free agent acquisition, again, I'm going to talk about Janmark. He's quickly becoming one of my new favorite players on the team. The fact that I actually read a tweet this morning, I believe it said that Janmark had like 6 goals scored in his last, you know, each of the last two seasons in Dallas. I mean, this is a guy that was a third, fourth line guy, and to be fair, would probably be a third, fourth line guy again if it wasn't for some of the injuries and then even the COVID issues where we've seen some players in and out of the roster the last couple of weeks because of COVID protocol. But the fact that he's on a power play unit, I'm seeing him out there getting looks on the lines of the likes of, you know, Kane and DeBrincat and Strome and all these other guys. You know, sometimes the pairings get really cool, especially on the power play, which we'll talk about here in a moment as well. But I really like the way he's playing. Suter, yeah, I agree with you. He kind of fell off after the hat trick last night, obviously showed up in a big way. Mm-hmm. Hagel, look, I always say, like, you know, not everybody's going to be big time point producers, but, you know, one of the reasons why I'm glad Andrew Shaw came back on the team this year is because, yeah, he doesn't score a lot of goals. He doesn't get a lot of assists, not a highly producing offensive player, but you appreciate the guys that are out there that do a little bit of everything, whether it's being physical, checking hard, making plays, you know, being getting those steals, intercepting passes, being, you know, in between the blue lines, you know, two-way forward type of stuff. You go on and on about those players are still important to your team. So a guy like Hagel, yeah, he may not score a lot, and I believe he's still looking for his first goal, but 2 assists in 11 games, it almost seems like he has 10 points in 11 games because that's the kind of impact that he has made on this team. But I want to talk about goaltending here because that's a bunch of new faces. I still can't believe last year we had, imagine having Robin Leonard and Corey Crawford and they're both not on the team. I still can't get over that, but I know I have to grow up already and move on. But hey, Kevin Lankinen appears to be winning that starting goaltender battle. I know head coach Jeremy Colliton was continuing to say on all of his post-game interviews with NBC Sports Chicago that after the home game. So we actually haven't heard any new updates in a while because they've been on the road again. But he was continuing to say, even when Lincoln was really starting to play well, his first couple of consecutive starts, he kept saying, it's an open competition. You know, we'll talk about it later. And you know, kind of pushing off the whole question of, will you give, you know, Lincoln the number one goalie position? And a lot of people are calling for it. And I think so too. I think he's one of the reasons why they're actually staying in games and why they're actually as relevant as they are right now, because goaltending has been pretty solid, because Subban and Delia, not so good. I mean, like, really not good. But Lankinen, he's facing tough shots and whatnot. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on his performance. And do you think he should get the nod as the number one goaltender at this point?
So you're not alone. I'm not over the Robin Leonard trade. He was one of my favorites, and I was so sad when he was gone. And I was like, okay, we're really going downhill after this. But Lankinen surprised me, because my prediction for this season was that Colin Delia would ultimately win the number one goalie, and I thought that Subban would be the number two. So Lankinen wasn't even on my radar. I knew he was there, but I didn't really have any expectations for that. So he came out and really surprised me. He had a really kind of rough first game where he let in 5 goals, but that was kind of expected. But he's really, like, calmed down and has been really steady. He does have a little bit of issue, I think, with his rebound control. And also his stick is kind of weak. Usually if he throws his stick out, then the puck comes right back at him. So I think, but overall, love his game. He is very steady, and I feel very comfortable, because I know if he lets in one goal, the most, then after that, he's probably going to let it is one more. He's not going to let in more than 3 usually. So I'm very comfortable in that sense. At this point, I'm comfortable naming him the number one, because he's the hot goalie right now, and you have to ride the hot goalie. But I see where they're going with the open competition thing. I do think Subban will see more time. He did a good job in his last game. I think more it's more like when Lankinen needs a break or whatever. But I am comfortable naming him the number one goalie as of right now. He's shown a good body of work the past few days to call himself, I think, the number one goalie. So I'm comfortable with that, very much so. And I think most fans are. He's been more than what we expected. And that's usually his thing. He's kind of flown under the radar his whole career. And I'm really happy for him. And I'm happy that this kind of came about, because, like I said, I was really upset when Leonard left, and I thought this is going to be ugly. So he's been a very pleasant surprise. And I love watching games now, because I know he's not going to let in 20 goals a game. So I'm happy about it. He should be the number one.
Yeah, Colin Delia, I believe in the 2 starts he did have this year, he allowed 10 goals. So, that, yeah. You know, there's definitely a big difference there. And I'll cut Subban and Delia a little bit of slack, because the first 2 games of the season, first off, you put this new team out here essentially on the ice against the defending Stanley Cup champions. And again, everything's been altered and goofy because of COVID, starting the season late, coming off of playing in a bubble. Like, everything is just not normal for these guys, especially for young guys trying to make it on the team or come up. And to start off your season against the Lightning, it was rough. And it's a little bit understandable, because both teams are in totally different scenarios, both on each end of the spectrum. So, but Subban looks to have been settling in a little bit. We haven't seen Dealey out there for a while. Mm-hmm. He might be the odd man out at the moment. He was the guy I thought, honestly, was going to be the one to maybe get that starting job, because a couple of years ago, I believe, when Cam Ward was backing up Corey Crawford, and then Crawford was dealing with some injuries and health issues, it was Delia and Cam Ward. And Delia was better than Cam Ward, who was, you know, that big, we thought was a big veteran signing for a guy that has experience between the pipes to be Crawford's backup, and then took more of a starting role with him being out. And that didn't go so well either. But yeah, and I told myself, never going to forgive Stan Bowman for trading Artemi Panarin, but I think the Robin Leonard trade is a close second, a very close mm-hmm. second. So I still have issues with those trades, but you know, it is what it is. This is where we're at, and maybe he hit on Lincoln, and I'll give him credit. So it's something I've seen you tweet about on Twitter a lot is, and a lot of people have talked about this too, the fact that the Blackhawks have a power play this year. And not only are they good at the power play, apparently we're better on offense with the power play than we are in any other scenario, especially 5-on-5. So, and which is okay though, because the Blackhawks haven't really had the greatest power play over the last couple of years. They've struggled. However, this year, I looked it up today in the standings. They have the 4th best power play in the league right now. And again, it's kind of ironic how they seem to be having more success with offense in many different areas of offense, not just the fact that they're scoring goals. It's obviously the big thing, but they seem to just be a lot better offensively when it comes to the power play rather than any other situation. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on the, why do you think that is? Do you see any changes outside of course, personnel? Do you see any changes with the way they're running their power play compared to what they've done, say, last year, where they were where they stunk? I'll just put it that way. They kind of stunk at it.
Yeah, that's a very pleasant way to put it. Yes, they stunk. And do you know what's funny is yesterday on Twitter, one of my Blackhawks follows, he was like, I don't understand. Last year on the power play, we had players like Tays and Gustafson on our power play, and we couldn't hit anything. And this year, we kind of got all new guys on the power play, and it's working. It's weird. But something that really sticks out to me is their passing is so much crisper on the power play. They're able to go from point A to point B, and it's not flying all over the place. It's not flying all the way over to the other end. And that's usually what it was a lot last year. It was kind of a lot of puck luck. Pucks were going everywhere except in the net. So that's the one thing that always sticks out to me is the passing is so much crisper. And it's a lot quicker, too. If you notice, if the guys are in front of the net, they're shooting right away. They're not waiting 20 seconds to shoot. So those are two things that I am impressed with. And also, they do a good job of creating lanes for themselves. They're good at getting right into scoring position and kind of confusing the penalty killers on the ice because they can just come right in and shoot. So yeah, those three things are definitely have been improving, not even improving because that wasn't even there last year, like at all. So that was a complete 360. And to be honest, this is how it always should have been. We had the kind of like when you have veterans on the power play, like Kane, DeBrincat, Strome, those were the same people on the power play last year and it didn't work. On paper, it should have worked. And this now is an example of these players on the power play should work. And now it does work. So something changed. And I think it's, yeah, the quick shots, the crisper passing, and quick entrance. That's what I think.
Well, and I'll even shout out a couple of players, too. I think, you know, you talk about how it's virtually the same players. Well, you know, Alex DeBrincat kind of had an off year compared mm-hmm. to what he did offensively in his first year, where he scored, I believe, 41 goals. He's mm-hmm. already been off to a hot start. I think Jeremy Colleton has given more time and more opportunity for Kubalik. Though I think he's become more of a pass first, more of a playmaker than a shooter this year. He's already got almost, I mean, he didn't really get that many assists last year. He was big time in the goal scoring category, but his game is evening out a little bit, but I think it's good to still see him out there. One of your best offensive players, best shooters out there on the power play. You're seeing him get more opportunity. And just, again, I think Colleton's even doing a good job of recognizing, like, you know, Janmark is vibing well. He's gelling with this team, and you put him out there because he's not afraid and he's got experience, and you're throwing him out there with some of these other guys again, DeBrincat, Kane, it's working. So I'll even give credit to Colleton, who listeners that listen to this podcast in the past know I've been very critical of Jeremy Colleton with line management and things. I haven't been the biggest fan of him, but he's, you know, I give credit where it's due. I am impressed with the way he's doing lines and some things this year. And I think you bring up some great points. Like, it just, especially at the beginning of the season, and maybe it was because there wasn't a lot of chemistry there again, because, you know, this team drastically looks different compared to what it was last year with the lines. You know, these newer players, these younger players, they come in, they now know how to play with Kane and some of these other guys that they're on a line with. And at the beginning of the year, it's like, it was tough to watch the first four or five games of the season. I'm not going to lie, because I felt like we couldn't even get past the blue line. Like, it just, there was no stick handling ability. There was no Patrick Kane-esque moves to get around a defender, deke around him and get, you know, into your offensive zone. So that, and then the passing, which we know was glorious for a long time when Quenneville was around and whatnot, where they would just dump it into the offensive zone and they'd be there for 5 minutes, even when it wasn't a power play, it felt like a power play. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, what do you think needs to, what do you think's wrong, or what do you think needs to get better with play on the five on five? Is it some of the stuff you just mentioned? Is it what I'm mentioning about possession and just getting over the blue line and actually being on the attack?
Yeah, to me, it's more about just creating offense. I feel like we don't do any of those things right unless we're on the power play, and I'm not really understanding that. I'm like, can we just play shorthanded all game? Because that seems to be the one thing that's working. And it bugs me because I feel like we can't score unless we're on the power play. We have no chance to win a game unless we score on the power play. Like you saw yesterday, we scored one goal on the power play. And thankfully, it led us to overtime and we won the game. But still, we can't. I don't think we can sustain that. I don't think we can continue to be on winning streaks unless we can start producing at even strength. And I don't know what needs to change. I don't know, like I said, just put all the mindset of what you do right on the power play, crisp passing, fast entry, all that stuff, and put it at 5-on-5. And we do a lot of lines during the game that usually work with Strome, DeBrincat, Kubalik, or even putting Kane with DeBrincat, and that kind of stuff works. And I don't know why it's not working or it's not translating, but that needs to change quickly because we're getting lucky right now. I don't know how long this can last, though, if we're not producing.
More episodes of Windy City Sports Talk can be found on Anchor.fm, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast as well. We now return to Windy City Sports Talk. You know, I will give, you know, another player you bring up, Strome, I'll give him a little bit of credit too, because I was hard on him last year. I was actually going to be okay if the Hawks didn't bring him back. I didn't know if he was really worth a lot of money, a big contract extension, but it, you know, we kind of, it turned out we really needed him once the Taze and Doc news came out. And also, he didn't get signed until late into the offseason. Mm-hmm. It was very close to the season starting. So it could have been a little bit like Stan Bowman was like, all right, well, I need another center and you're one of the better options we have. So, but I mean,
completely agree.
I think he's kind of gotten a little bit quiet, but he had a nice strong start to the season. Again, we've only played, I think Pat Foley said on the broadcast last night, we just reached the quarter mark. So even in a shortened 56 game season, there's still plenty of time left. There's still a lot of games, but Strome has stepped up to the plate at the beginning of the season. I hope to see him step up again. I feel like when, you know, he's the guy that he's going to be centering lines with DeBrincat and Kubalik and Kane this entire season. He's going to center power play lines. So I truly do expect him to generate some kind of offense, generate some kind of points. So he's a guy I expect to see a little bit more from. And I think he's going to be a relevant player and be a player to rely on. I think he might be in a little bit of a quiet patch right now, but I expect to see him bounce back and bounce out of that. So, but we're talking about the power play. We're talking about offense. We got to look at the penalty kill and even some defense here. The power play has been strong. The penalty kill started off a little bit slow. It was average, but actually in the last week, because I'm a big stat guy, I've been monitoring the stats. You know, I do it every week. It's a little problem, I guess I have. But so I was looking at comparing stats, and last week the penalty kill was 17th, so it was, you know, average in the middle of the pack. But I looked earlier today and now they're ranked 9th, so they've gotten better. They're in the top 10 on both special teams units. That's very impressive. And a lot of people I've had conversations with, whether it's on this podcast or just talking hockey and talking Blackhawks, you know, off the air as well, they were worried about the defense. They were really bad last year. We know there's been a lot of changes there too, injuries, and, you know, our guys are getting old. I mean, you know, Duncan Keith, though, it's amazing how he could just keep going. I don't know how that guy does it. He leads the team in ice time every year, every game, every week. It's amazing. But we again, when we talk about new and young faces, you got the youth movement kind of coming in here with, you know, Boquist coming back again, Ian Mitchell, Bodine added to the mix, a lot of Lucas Carlson's back in there too, a lot of young faces in there mixing and trying to gel with Connor Murphy and Duncan Keith, and I've actually been impressed. I think they've been playing pretty well, and I truly think defense has been another reason. I think it's goalie is the top reason why we're relevant this year. Then I say defense, not even offense or the power play, because to be honest with you, I personally think the defense, if it wasn't for the defense, some of those games early on the season, there could have been a lot more bleeding. There could have been a lot more goals, because when you can't get, you know, when you can't get it out of your own blue line and maintain possession on the in the offensive zone, I mean, what do you expect? Like, you can't expect the defense to stop them for 10 straight minutes of ice time when it feels like, you know, you're on the penalty kill all the time. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on the way the defense is playing and how the penalty kill has been this year with the combination of veterans and youngsters.
I had zero expectations for this defense. I knew we were getting new faces, but it was bad last year. And even with like veterans, like we got Olimata last year and stuff like that, you would think would help, and it just wasn't a fit. So I figured with new guys, it wasn't going to be much better. But I will say, I think the defense as a whole has been doing better because the team defense is a lot better. Like you said, goaltending. I mean, goaltending was great last year with Crawford and Leonard, but I'm also talking about we also got good defensive players like Janmark and Walmark, and Camp has always been good at playing defense. So we got some good two-way players that have really helped our defense, but also like Connor Murphy and Duncan Keith. Like you said, Duncan Keith is like, I don't know, he's like in another realm because he is an older guy and yet he is like out there skating 26 minutes a night. I mean, I'm always impressed by him. But also our young guys though are a lot better than I thought, because usually defensemen take a while to develop or longer to develop, and you would think it would look very, very messy, and at some points it does, but for the most part it has been working for whatever reason. Ian Mitchell has looked a lot more comfortable than he did to start the season. He was kind of off a little bit. And then Bodine, I'm sorry, I hope I'm saying that right. He has been very impressive. I'm very impressed with him. I think he's going to be really good. And now it seems like Bokvist is kind of the man out because the defense has been doing okay and you don't really want to mess with that. But obviously he is going to be coming back and we need him back. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. But overall, yeah, they've, for some reason, they're gelling together. On paper, it looks horrendous, but it works somehow. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just the players are just comfortable with each other. It seems like it. So whatever it is, it's working and I'm not complaining about it.
I think the important thing is they're giving these guys time to play, because, you know, if you could sit here and be stingy and keep these guys in the AHL, or you can, you know, do like, you know, what's happening in Columbus where, play, you know, they're benching players and limiting their ice time because they're not hustling or they're out there for a goal against. It's that, you know, you could be tough on the youngsters, but at the end of the day, you got to give them an opportunity. And at this point, the Hawks really had no choice but to throw Boquist out there and throw Ian Mitchell and some of these other guys, because they, you know, again, we know they don't have the money to go spend and invest in big names. Like we saw some big names being moved around in free agency a couple of months ago, but I will give, since I'm in the mood to give shout outs today, I'll even give a shout out to Connor Murphy, because I never thought he would be as solid as he is. I was, again, another one of those trades. You're like, okay, now we're getting rid of Hjalmarsson. That was another rough off season, but I have actually grown to like that trade, because I think Connor Murphy's, you know, he's a younger option. He's at this point more relevant than what you'd get from Hjalmarsson. But, and I know that's shocking to say, because a lot of people love Hjalmarsson because he really was a heck of a defender. But at the end of the day, If you had to rank who's the next best defenseman after Keith, which we know the guy that's looking like Jesus these days with the hair, he's still the number one defenseman on the team, but who's second? I would say it's Connor Murphy. And it's not just because, well, you know, we're still seeing what Ian Mitchell and the other younger guys are going to become, but like he's literally become a reliable defenseman. And, you know, when you hear him on the broadcast yesterday, he didn't play yesterday because of a hip injury. When you hear him mentioned periodically throughout all three periods, and even maybe once in overtime, that, you know, yeah, Connor Murphy's not playing tonight, blah, blah, blah. Like when you get talked about, it's a big deal that you're not in. That means you're becoming a really crucial part of the team, and Connor Murphy has become that. So I mean, he's almost like, when I say like those combos between a veteran and a youngster in the pairing, it's, you know, it's Duncan Keith and a new guy, it's Connor Murphy and a new guy. It's like they're giving him, you know, giving him the recognition and the ability to be that main foundational piece in the defense as well. So again, since I'm in the mood to give shout outs to some of these guys, Connor Murphy is definitely on the list there for that as well. So as we know, this year's different. I mentioned it earlier, you know, it's a 56 game regular season. It's a totally different realignment. You know, there's divisions now. It's not East and West conferences. It's, you know, divisions. And basically how it plays out is that, you know, the top four teams in the Central Division will qualify for the playoffs at the end of the season. And right now the Hawks are sitting in third place. Now it's really tight. I mean, they're tied with a couple of other teams. And again, like we said earlier, it's early. They've only played a fourth of the season, but if the Hawks can continue to play the way they are, of course, we know there's some room for improvement, but if this is the lowest they get at this point, do you think it's reasonable to kind of hold their breath and hope and see them contend for a chance to make the playoffs this year?
Yes and no. I'm kind of weird about that because I was talking to my Blackhawks team about this before we went on, but I was like, our division right now stinks. These teams, besides Tampa Bay, stink. Nashville is not very good. Detroit is not very good. Columbus looks worse, I think, than they did. The Canes look a lot worse, I think, than they did. I feel like right now the Blackhawks are catching a huge break. So at this point, if these teams continue to go downward, I know a lot of teams are missing players right now because of the pandemic and injuries and stuff, but if we can kind of take advantage of these teams in that way, then I don't think it's far-fetched to say that they can make it. But like I said, there is a lot of room to improve. Like I said, they're getting lucky, I think, right now with facing teams that should be good but are somehow going downhill. And the fact that they're just getting lucky because it seems like most of these teams also in the division have scoring issues. So we're getting away with the fact that we can score power play goals and win games. But I don't think that's going to sustain very long. I think most teams, as they continue throughout the season, will probably get more comfortable and play to their potential. If that happens, I think we could be in trouble, but right now it's fun and I'm kind of just holding on to the fun before, I don't want to say before the shoe drops, but like I said, it's fun and entertaining right now, but I don't know, like I said, how long this can last. Their skill is kind of eh, and yeah, I don't honestly, it's more like about not wanting to be hurt. Like if they make the playoffs and then just get completely embarrassed, like how they did against Vegas. Like, I don't want to prolong the suffering, but it is fun to see what they're doing right now. I hope it can last. And I think it can. I think they can if the other teams continue downward and we can continue going up. But that depends on if, you know, we still have a lot of time left if teams kind of start getting back to their old form. So I don't think it's far-fetched, but I think it kind of is at the same time, if that makes sense.
Well, look, they've played everybody in their division twice now, so they have a feel how everybody is. However, six more games to play against Tampa. That's going to be tough to get any wins there. Florida, they're 7-1-2 right now. I don't know if I see them sustaining that success for long either. But I mean that even when we played the Panthers, we were still kind of. And we were still kind of iffy then, but I look at a team like Carolina. I expect them to kind of, I mean, 7-3 is not a bad start. Again, it's weird to talk about Florida and Carolina, for example, because they've only played 10 games. Those are teams that they didn't even play some games because of COVID issues. So I guess you got to give them maybe another 4 or 5 games to truly compare them with the rest of us. But I don't want to, I hate giving myself false hope here, but I really have a feeling they could vie for that fourth and final spot in the Central, because like I said, I don't think Florida sustains the success.
No.
Columbus, I don't, they have a lot, they're a hot mess right now with Tortorella and just that team and coaching staff in general. But I really think it could come down to the Hawks vying for the fourth spot with, I would say, the Hurricanes or Dallas. I mean, Dallas is still a pretty good team on paper. They're,
right.
Why they're so sluggish right now, I mean, to be fair, we took them to overtime the last two games. So, I mean, they were close. They could have won either way. And they're another team. They played 10 games because of they were the team that got ravaged with COVID earlier at the beginning of the season. They didn't even start playing for a while. So I expect to see them maybe pick it up, but I'm going to be that guy that says, oh, maybe there's a chance we make it. At the end of the day, I just hope they can contend for it. As long as they're not at the bottom with Detroit, you know, being in seventh or eighth place with Nashville or Detroit, I'm okay. I just want it to at least be a relevant season. And at the end of the day, I've never been a fan or a believer in tanking in any sport.
No.
I think the best way to develop your team and especially your young players is to play and compete and try to win, try to win, put these guys in position. I guess that leads me to my next question then, given the fact that it's another season, kind of like last year where it's like, you're not really a true Stanley Cup contender. Do you care about a draft pick acquiring hopefully another future star? Or do you say, let's take a shot at it and just see what we could do? Because again, we got to give these guys experience, and what's the best way to get experience is actually playing these guys and contending and not trying to build a losing culture. Curious your thoughts on that.
So I agree with everything that you're saying. Realistically, if we're talking about playoffs, I don't think this team has what it needs to go far, But I will say this, last year we were boringly bad. Like there was absolutely nothing to be excited about when you watched. You're just like, oh, this is bad. But I think as a hockey fan, no matter what your who your team is, if your team is good or bad, you want your team to be at least entertaining and competitive. I would take being entertainingly bad than being boringly bad all day long. And I feel like even if you're like a fan of a team like Detroit, who is very bad, I think the most you could just want out of your team is to just be competitive, make it worth something. And they've actually made this worth something. They showed that these young guys can be entertaining. You can see growth, and that's what you want. You want us to at least be competitive. Now, will that take us into playoffs? I don't know. Maybe it could, but yeah, tanking's not, yeah, that's not really the way to go. But we actually kind of discussed this on Blackhawks Banter too, because we were like, would you rather make the playoffs? Would you rather lose for a higher draft pick? We were kind of talking about that. And out of the, or would you rather make huge trades to make us competitive now? And we said out of the three options, losing for the higher pick seemed the least offensive, but that's not what we meant. We don't mean to tank, but they're making it way better than I thought they would. At least they're entertaining. Like I said, I don't know if this can sustain, but I'd take this all day, every day over what we thought, which was just going to be really boringly bad, unwatchable hockey. So we'll take that all day long.
I'm the same way. I mean, like I said, it's like the last couple of years, it's like, I didn't even want to watch the games at night. Like last night, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put aside, you know, some stuff and watch this game because at least they're entertaining. And even though, you know, it was, you know, 1-1 or 1-0 trailing most of the game, I mean, not high scoring. A lot of these games, the Hawks haven't been scoring a lot of goals, as we talked about with the offense. But I mean, the fact that they're at least in the games, and then, you know, it's always satisfying the win in overtime like that. That game last night, if you really go through the journey of watching from start to finish, it's truly rewarding to see how that game ends. So, right. But as we wrap up here, you actually kind of led me into what I want to talk about next, because again, if you're Stan Bowman, you got a lot of decisions here. If this is a year where they're going to be kind of relevant and still try to contend for, you know, a playoff spot, they have decisions to make in terms of, you know, when the trade deadline comes around. Now the trade deadline, which usually comes actually within the next couple of weeks, isn't happening until April 12th now because of everything being altered. And we know Stan Bowman loves to make trades, whether we love him, whether we hate him, he's always making something. So despite this team's surprising competitiveness, do you see Stan Bowman maybe being active at the deadline? And does, depending on the team's performance, play a role into what he's doing, buying or selling?
Yeah, I do see Stan Bowman being active because, one, it seems like no matter if we want him to be active or not, he is. Problem is, I don't trust Stan Bowman to be in charge of these trades. I don't mind trades, but they have to be the right trades. And at this point, like I said, hypothetically, if we continue on this path and all the other teams in the Central just continue to tank or, you know what I mean, lose out, then I could see us trying to buy at the deadline for something, maybe just a more veteran type of player if we're really serious about a playoff spot. Otherwise, if you're not, then I would trade for youth, honestly, youth or draft picks. I don't mind. I was kind of with you on Strom. I'm kind of iffy on him, to be honest. I actually wouldn't mind moving him if we could get something for him. Like I said, I'm very good with draft picks or more youth, because that's what we're seeing to be on right now is the youth movement. That's our plan. And I heard Connor Murphy's name around in the rumor mill. I don't see us giving him up, but I see the point of it, like getting a good return for him. I don't think that's going to happen, but I can definitely see us being buyers at the deadline, because I didn't really think we'd be sellers this year, whether we were good or bad, because like I said, it's more about just let the youth take over and see where that comes in, what that comes to. But yeah, I see us buying, honestly, because that seems like something Bowman would do. If he really like sets his mind to something and he believes this is a playoff team, then I can see him buying.
I could see him buying if they're really in there, like in the playoff picture, especially, you know, a couple months from now when we get closer to the end of the season and obviously the deadline. I don't know if I'd necessarily agree with it. In a way, I would like to see them. I still want to see what these young guys could do, because, and again, this could change in a couple of weeks. You know, emotions always drive our opinions in different directions. But right now, the emotions are telling me, yeah, keep going with these young guys. I'm at the moment, I'm kind of set on the team. I want to see, you know, just how far we could, this team could be taken by, you know, DeBrincat and Kubalik and Suter and Kurashev, you know, Ian Mitchell, these guys helping drive this team forward with, again, your usual veteran guys and Kane and Keith. And I don't know, you know, they haven't ruled out Toews for the season, but to me, it just looks more and more like we shouldn't expect him this year. Mm-hmm. But I kind of want to see them just take it with what they have now. I actually wouldn't really have a problem if they sold one or two players. I don't care if they trade Strome. I think right now isn't the best time because, again, without Doc and without Toews, they just don't have the center depth, you know, without three of those guys. If you obviously include Strome in that, if they trade them, and Connor Murphy, I don't think they should. I think, again, we talked about, I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I think he's the next best defenseman right now on this team after Duncan Keith. So I've heard people talk about maybe if you're going to get rid of an older defenseman, maybe Calvin DeHaan.
Yes. That's what I thought too.
Yeah. Or then there's, I saw somebody, not that you're going to get much value out of him, I don't think, cause especially he's out there on the ice, but I don't see him doing much as, Carl Soderberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at maybe these veteran pieces that if they sell to a contender or a contending team that they're going to feel comfortable maybe bringing in Soderberg or Strom, somebody that's, you know, been around. Like, you're not going to sell off any of the young guys for much just yet. But I don't know, again, and I feel like when you acquire players, it's you're giving up more sometimes. Mm-hmm. So like if they wanted to acquire a decent guy to put the throw on the first or second line, that means you have to get rid of a couple of these young guys and a couple of draft picks. And I'm so tired of Stan Bowman giving away. I feel like we give away so much more than we need to and never get the value back in return. So I'll end with this. I'm kind of hoping this is the year Stan Bowman says, you know what, I'm going to relax. I'm going to take it easy. We're just going to let things play out. And we'll evaluate at the end of the season. That's where I stand.
Yeah. And I mean, you could see the benefits of both directions, honestly, but with the right general manager at the helm. Like I said before, I don't trust him to do this kind of stuff. It actually makes me scared when the deadline comes around, because you don't know what you're going to get. Hell, we'll probably trade Lincoln in. Like, there's no like logic or reasoning with him usually. And it's very, it provides a lot of anxiety.
Yeah, and again, it's one thing to lose a player you like or a player that's important on the team, but it's also the fact that, you know, what you got in return for Artemi Panarin wasn't that great. Robin Lehner, I mean, Subban, I mean, right now at this point, at best, he's the backup. And I don't even know if he's going to be a long-term backup, because at this point, and again, there's still so many more games to play. There's more time to give these guys some more chances. But, you know, even the Robin Lehner trade didn't benefit us at all. Doesn't look like it's going to benefit us at all. So there's a reason why there's a lot of critics of Stan Bowman out there. But hey, I'm glad it's at least an entertaining season so far. They're staying somewhat relevant. I think that's great to see. But thank you for coming on the show today. I do appreciate it. I did enjoy the conversation and your hockey knowledge.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a blast.
Okay, and everybody, again, be sure to check out Brooke on the hockeywriters.com website. Check out all of her great articles. And of course, and you said it's every Monday you guys do the little podcast on YouTube as well?
Yes, every Monday night at 7 p.m. Central.
Everybody go check out all of her great work and all of her colleagues as well. So thanks again, Brooke, for coming on today. And of course, everybody, you know where you could find this podcast: anchor.fm, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. Rate it, subscribe, and stay tuned for more. So thanks for everybody for listening, and be well. Thanks for listening to Windy City Sports Talk. To find more great episodes, be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast on anchor.fm, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Pocket Casts, Overcast, and Radio Public. Thanks again for listening, and be well.